You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
Welcome back, everybody, and happy Easter. I hope you're enjoying your early morning Easter Sunday here in the Northeast. Looks like it's going to be a beautiful day today. Remember, I think I heard the upper 70s today, Matt. So a nice day to get out and do some traveling.
Yeah, no, we might even hit 80. So, I mean, it's actually warm. When I was walking in today, you could tell it's going to be a hot one.
Well, that's good. I mean, as of dealing with the winter and even the spring. The spring actually hasn't been bad. Even the winter wasn't really bad.
Yeah, we kind of got off easy this winter.
Yeah, so knock on wood here. I'll take it. Nice weather. It's baseball weather. That's what I come to think of. That's why for me, baseball season is always sort of special, always sort of romantic opening day because it means I'm not going to freeze my ass off anymore.
Well, speaking of baseball, can I? I got to read a really good tweet by Jason Collette. Mookie Betts has gone 113 plate appearances without striking out, dating back to September 13th. In that same time span, Byron Buxton has K'd 47 times in 111 plate appearances.
So that's not good, right?
Yeah, that's like both ends of the spectrum. You really couldn't.
Hey, Buxton had a double yesterday. You leave him alone.
Yeah, you know, I think it was off of Jose Quintana, too. It's made it even more depressing. You figure at least he was going to get three or four strikeouts.
That's actually a pretty good lead-in, Matt. Buxton, panic or patience?
I think you're panicking. In the same time, in that same breath, I think you still have to be patient with this kid. If he, like you said, if you have a bench, we all have a bench. I mean, you got to put him there for a little bit and just see if this kid can turn it around. Because I do believe there is a ton of talent there. I just think on speed alone, if this kid decides, if I was him, I would bunt once every game. And if he can get on base and just start getting some confidence, 30 stolen bases should be very easy for Byron Buxton.
Agreed. And I think what people sometimes forget is, well, you know, they're going to play him in for the bunt, da-da-da-da. You know, but that's not – I think people sometimes they don't set themselves up for later. You know, it's sort of like when guys who don't hit to the right side or left side to try and beat the shift. The idea is, yes, you might make some outs, but they'll also be forced to play you differently. And that will open up holes for you later. Even if you bunt a few balls and you get thrown out. But that also means the third baseman has to play in. The first baseman has to play in. Now you can slap balls by them.
Exactly.
You know, it'll buy you hits later. So sometimes you have to set yourself up for later. You know, it's something that Manny Ramirez used to do when he was at bat. And he used to purposely make himself look foolish on a pitch. Because he knew they'd throw that pitch again. And then guess what? He's ready for it. He's going to hit it 9 miles. You know, so it's setting players up sometimes. Or setting the pitcher up, whatever you want to look at it. And I do think it's important there. So I agree with you about Buxton. Mainly because, listen, I was on this guy. I wanted him. Ironically, I don't think I have him in any league. I think he went earlier than I expected. I think by the time I did my drafts, everybody was on him. So I'm going to have some patience. We'll say it again. It's April 16th. We're only today is the two-week mark of the season. So I don't want to give up on him yet. But, you know, as you brought up, as Jason Collette brought up, that strikeout rate. That's got to come down because he can't strike out 44% of the time. That's a little silly.
Yeah, I think right now in 2017, he's like 52% of the time. You know, it's just there has to be a correction. And I honestly believe, you know, the one thing in the back of his mind that he was scared about starting the season was striking out and getting off to a bad start. And once that happened, it just snowballed. You know, he just lost total confidence and – yeah, like I think you mentioned it yesterday. He's pretty much getting up to the plate, hoping not to strike out, then get a hit.
Right, and you can't be like that in baseball. You just can't. And another player we're seeing that, once again, panic or patience, Greg Bird of the Yankees. He looks terrible. He did hit one ball hard. I mean, this is what we've come down to now. He hit a ball hard yesterday.
Yeah.
All right.
I do love when the analysis gets to that. Then, you know, things have gone pretty south fast. But once again, I'm going to give him a little leeway for the fact that he had an ankle problem and missed some games. He had the flu. I wasn't as high on Greg Bird as some people were, but I think this is a player that, you know, that has upside. That park, once again, it's tailor-made for him. It's tailor-made, you know, short porch, left-handed hitter. We've seen him do it in a short sample a couple of years ago when he came up. I mean, look, he killed it in the spring, but you have to be careful about spring training. But the Yankees want him. The Yankees need him to be their first baseman. So I think, you know, just relax a little. Another guy. You have a bench just for these kind of things too. Instead of maybe holding on, if you have like some kid in the minors that's a couple of months away, put Greg Bird on your bench and put somebody else in there.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really disappointing. I think this happened after a normal spring training. Yeah, it'd be annoying, but nobody'd be up on this. But his draft value skyrocketed because he was Babe Ruth during spring training. He was hitting all these home runs, all these doubles. He was leading the Yankees in every category, leading the majors in every category in spring training, and then to do a complete 180. And I don't think I've ever seen it where he looks lost at the plate. He's another guy. You can see it. He's thinking right now. There's no natural ability. He's waving through 91-mile-per-hour fastballs right down Broadway. He's just not even close to them. So, like I said, you're the severe – I guess I'm the severe optimist. He hit a ball hard yesterday. It was his last at-bat. Maybe he'll figure it out. But I think we all know that. He has to be on your bench right now. I don't want to release him unless I have to. You know, it really depends on the size of your bench. Maybe you only have a two-man bench, a four-man bench. You know, maybe you got Trey Turner, Matt Kemp, all these other guys that are on the DL, Josh Donaldson, and you have no choice. You know, we all got to do what we got to do, which is why I prefer DL moves. But, you know, hey, Greg Bird right now, he does look lost. I'm probably closer to the panic with him than I am with patience.
Yeah, like I say, it's not easy. Just to give an example, maybe this isn't even the right example, but I just want to show what a guy can do with a terrible April and then from, say, May 1st on. Like Mike Napoli last April batted .205, hit four homers, and had 11 RBIs at the end of April. From May 1st on, he hit 30 homers, drove in 90 runs, and, you know, so that's what you need. You know, you just need to be a little patient. Maybe he just got off to the slow start. He's pressing now. That's why you have a bench, in my opinion. But, you know, I am a little scared too.
So you got a little Guns N' Roses practice, a little patience. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's fine. I'm good with that. You can play, you mentioned earlier, Jose Quintana. I understand we're going to be patient here. But this is three bad starts. And the White Sox are going to be like, you got to be kidding me. You're ruining your trade value. Stop it.
Yeah, the White Sox are none too happy. The White Sox maybe should have traded him when they had, you know. I know they want to do it with Houston, and I know there's a couple of guys they really want from Houston. Maybe you're not going to get, say, there's three guys that they want. Maybe instead of getting the three, you get two of the guys you want or something like that. But it makes no sense for Jose Quintana to remain with the White Sox. Maybe this is getting on him a little. Hey, the first start of the year was against Detroit. He's in his career, or at least in his last 10 starts versus Detroit, he's got like a 5.30 ERA. It is a horrendous matchup for it. It's all powerful right-handed hitters. And not just like right-handed hitters, very good right-handed hitters. We're looking at like elite guys too. So that was a horrible matchup. And the other thing I mentioned yesterday, I hate when my starting pitcher faces the same team twice. It just usually ends up, you know, sometimes you get the one good start and then the other start's bad. I mean, the argument could be made, hey, look at Irvin Santana. Look what he did. A one-hit shutout. So, you know, that's really not an excuse. I've just seen too much. He's got too big of a track record. I'm not worried about Jose Quintana.
I don't think I – worried might be too strong a word here. But, you know, his trade value is high mainly because his contract – he's a good pitcher and his contract is so good. He's not Chris Sale. He's not Max Scherzer. He's not dominant like that. He does pitch in a bandbox. And I wonder now that he's off to this slow start, I think Chicago's going to be very stubborn here. I don't think the price has come down to acquire him because of three bad starts. So I think since they're going to be stubborn, they're going to want to hold on to him. Now he may not get traded for another month, 6 weeks, 2 months. Maybe not. Maybe he's a deadline trade now. And what I was thinking about that is, I mean, he could be pitching a long time now in cellular field, assuming they still call it cellular field. You know, so that could be a problem because, like, the ball's going to fly out of that ballpark, especially when the weather gets warmer. I think you bring up a good point. Maybe the all the trade talk is getting on him. Maybe he knows, listen, I'm not going to be in Chicago all season long. I got to go buy a house. I got to go sell my house. Got to move the family. Got to, you know, kick the dog, whatever it might be. So I think that could also be weighing on him as well. So I'm not panicking, and you know, I'm certainly not releasing him, but I'm probably sitting him for now. I need to see one good start, I think, here.
Yeah, see, this is a question I think we should talk about. I was reading, I think, a blurb in, say, Roto World. Another player that fits this description, Kenta Maeda, is like, oh, he's not a fantasy asset, and you shouldn't put him in your starting rotation if he's going to pitch like this. I mean, obviously, if he's going to pitch bad, you're not going to put the guy in the rotation. But my thing is, unless it's somebody I'm taking late, you know, I'm taking a flyer on and stuff, guys that I, you know, pretty much have in, like, say, my top three starting pitchers or so, and in deeper formats, I'll even probably go a little further, but these guys are going to be in my rotation, or whatever you want to call it, staff, every week for the fact that I'm buying these guys over 30 to 32 starts. And the minute I take them out and then I miss that good start, I'm not making that up. So, I mean, I don't know. Certain guys, I think you just have to leave them in there. I mean, unless you're in like a trading league and, you know, maybe you want to trade them or package a deal. But I don't know. That's the way I look at it. Am I wrong?
No, I just don't know if Quintana's in that category. I don't think you're wrong at all. But I don't know if I put Quintana in that must start game in, game out, because like I said, I mean, what are you hoping for here? He's not the Scherzer sales. He's not gonna have too many lights out outings. Plays in cellular field, and maybe more importantly to me, he can pitch great and lose 2-1.
Yeah, no. I get everything you're saying. This is what I'm buying with Jose Quintana. I'm buying 200 innings, and I'm buying a 350 or under ERA. I mean, he's been 320, 336, and 332 the last 3 years. So if I get 200 innings and 350 or less, that's really good in today's environment, considering last year, you know, starting pitchers were like 434 ERA. So that's my point. And the minute I miss that, say, 8 innings, you know, 1 run, 6 strikeouts, no walks, I'm not getting that back from him.
What if I tell you right now, and we're talking about maybe benching Quintana, you want to automatically put him in next start against Cleveland?
I'm going to roll him out there. I mean, he's a guy I have as a top three pitcher on a lot of teams, and I just find it when I start sitting these guys that should be in. Look, if he was playing in maybe, like, you know, Coors Field, he's going to Coors Field. You know, Detroit, I may say, you know what, it's just a terrible matchup. It's been proven time and time again. But for the most part, even with Cleveland, I mean, Cleveland's been held in check a couple times. I know they got to Verlander yesterday. That was not a fun experience being a Justin Verlander owner in a couple of leagues. I was like, that Saturday afternoon got ugly real quick between Verlander and Lance McCullers.
Yeah, I believe I was following you. I follow you on Twitter. I think I remember hearing you bitching about a couple of stars. I have to admit, maybe it's just my personality, but I find that funny when something's going really wrong for somebody. Oh, this pitcher blew up. Oh, no, this guy. Not, to me, that's amusing. We all have it happen. This is one of those days.
But, yeah, and you have to bitch about that. And you have to vent. Like, one of the guys was like, well, Verlander has this from time to time, especially versus Cleveland. I'm like, yeah, that's fine. And I'm allowed to bitch about it when it happens.
Of course, we all do. That's one of the things we do best with fans. Say, well, complain. You know. No, so we all do that. We all complain. I mean, listen, we all have things go wrong, and it seems to snowball on us. That's fantasy for us, right? I mean, it was baseball, football, hockey, basketball, NASCAR. We always, you know, hey, all four of my tires fell off. You know, it happens. Yeah, and listen, if it was easy, it wouldn't be as much fun. If everything went your way, it
exactly.
Wouldn't be as much fun.
You're 100% right on that, George. You really are. At least the night ended supremely well with James Paxton. I'll say that.
Yes, Paxton had a great outing. Listen, I've said it before. There are nights, and I know this maybe because I'm crazy, but you know, it's 10 o'clock at night, and I'm having a great fantasy night, and I'm alive and awake. you know, it's great, let's go. I'm watching all the games, and there are other nights. It's 8:30, and I've got nothing. I've got nothing, and I'm going to bed. That's it. I've had it. I'm out. 9 o'clock. Honey, I'm out. I'm going to bed.
It's amazing how the mood shifts, the mood swings, whether you have a really good day or a really bad day.
It's so true. I've done that many times. You feel bad somewhat. You know, I got my kids. I love my girls. Got my wife. Love my wife. Like, I can't take it. I'm having such a terrible fantasy night. You know, you're on so many leagues. There's nothing going right. You look at all this thing. I'm 2 for 38 in this league. You know, this pitcher gave up 18 earned. I was like, oh, that's it. I need a new day. I just need a new day. And speaking of a new day, we're going to have a new segment for you on this Easter morning Sunday. Matt Modica, George Kurtz, right after this. Well, now we got like techno music here. And you never know what Pete Contori is going to come up with.
You know what it just sounds like, George? It sounds like Beverly Hills Cop, a little Axel Foley kind of music.
That's one of my favorite movies.
Yeah, that first one's so good.
Yeah, I don't even know if I saw the one with Bridget Nielsen and whatever else. That was sort of ridiculous there. But the first one is just is really just fantastic. That's absolutely – and we're dating ourselves here. I think that came out in the mid to late 80s maybe.
I think even earlier than that maybe.
Yeah, well,
I'd say like more mid.
Maybe, yeah. great flick though. Probably the I was going to say the first Eddie Murphy movie I liked, but actually 48 Hours would be the first Eddie Murphy movie that was –
That's another real good one.
We ain't brothers, we ain't cousins, and we ain't friends. But fantastic flick. I have them both on DVD. I'm a big DVD guy. I have like 700-800 DVDs here at home. I like to watch movies while I'm writing. So that brings me back. That definitely brings me back. Good old-time movies here.
That they were.
What's your favorite movie, Matt?
Oh, I mean, I think The Godfather has to be up there. I think The Godfather 1 and 2 were just so well done. Jaws, though, is right there. I mean, Captain Quint is probably one of my favorite movie characters of all time. Robert Shaw was just amazing in that movie. To me, he makes the movie more than anybody.
Jaws is my favorite.
Yeah, that's like those movies, every time they're on, I just catch myself watching them, you know, you're flipping through. I'll probably throw a bit. I mean, Shawshank's definitely somewhere around there. That's just too good of a movie. My wife loves that one.
I've got all these, every new movie you've named so far. I've got the DVD of all of them. I love Jaws. Shawshank is great. Raiders of the Lost Ark, Star Wars, Die Hard, Lethal Weapon, Pulp Fiction is a movie I can watch over and over.
Yeah, Pulp Fiction, that was tremendous. It really was.
I remember going to see that movie. I went there with a bunch of my friends, a bunch of my hockey friends, hockey teammates, and it's amazing. People were walking out half hour in because they just couldn't understand it. You know, they just couldn't understand what was going on. I remember thinking, why are you walking out? This movie's fantastic. And it was absolutely great. And the people were walking out of the theaters here. They didn't understand what Tarantino was doing, where the middle was the end was the beginning, and all this other stuff. But just a great movie with Samuel Jackson and John Travolta.
Yeah, I mean, Samuel L. Jackson does his best work in the, what do you call movies? Who's the director?
Tarantino.
Yeah. All the Tarantino movies, he's like tremendous. Look, I give him credit. He does basically any movie that you offer him. I actually worked on a low-budget Samuel L. Jackson movie the only low-budget movie I ever did, and I kind of regretted it because it was just a terrible experience. But I worked on his movie, and he'll do anything. But he's so much better in Tarantino films.
I think one of his first movies was Goodfellas.
Yes, you want to know what movie he actually was his first movie? Was The Taking of Pelham 123, the original one. He's the guy on the train. Robert Shaw, getting back to Robert. It's all about Robert Shaw this morning, I guess. But Robert Shaw's in the original, not the John Travolta one. And Samuel L. Jackson plays an extra on the train, and he has like a one line or something like that. He makes a thing. But that, I believe, was his first movie.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I like watching old TV shows, like maybe a Magnum, something like that. And I love seeing old actors who were, like I said, nobody's back then. You know, mm-hmm. They were just extras, yeah, or one liners, and you realize, hey, that's this guy, you know. And I'm watching Spencer for Hire the other day, and sure enough,
that's Robert
Jackson.
Blake, right? We're talking Spencer.
No, that's
Robert.
Robert Yerk.
York, yeah, sorry about that. York.
Yeah, Spencer Swat of Vegas. It was all Robert Urich. He passed away some years ago. Mm-hmm. Too bad. He's an actor I actually liked quite a bit. But Samuel Jackson is in a couple of episodes, actually. Bad guy, of course. But it's just amazing when you see him and they're so young. You know, this is 30 years ago, as far as Spencer was concerned. So,
yeah, even like movies, you'll find some movies and you'll be like, wow, look at the cast they had. Look at all these people that were in it that are now like stars. I totally get what you're saying.
What's your favorite baseball movie?
You know what? To me, my favorite one, I have to think about it for a second, but Bad News Bears to me definitely has to be the original one. We're talking 1976, whatever. That's definitely got to be in it. I know a lot of people love The Sandlot, but maybe I was too old, or it was you know, different time periods for me. I think the original Bad News Bears blows that out of the water.
I agree with you. I think, I guess...
I mean, Kelly Leak, you don't really get better than Kelly Leak character.
I have to admit, though, I didn't like Sandlot at all, but I wasn't a big Bad News... I mean, I like Bad News Bears, but I wasn't one of these people who loves it. I'm more into, like, The Natural, Major League, Field of Dreams. There's an old HBO movie. I know you probably haven't seen it, but a made-for-HBO movie with William Peterson, who was Grissom on CSI, for those who are wondering, called Long Gone.
Oh, that's the minor league one?
Yes,
I've seen that.
Yeah, I thought that was a pretty good good baseball
movie.
I
enjoyed that one. I mean, I'll say this about The Natural. I just thought they went so over the top. I read some of the book when I was like 10 years old or something. I really do want to read that book. Because I think the book, from what I know of, is just so amazing. And why they didn't go that direction is kind of baffling.
You know, Matt, we actually have a phone call.
Oh, cool.
And it's from somebody we all know and love. I have to say this because he's our boss. Mike Cardano's on the line.
Oh, happy Easter, Mike.
Happy Easter, Mike.
Happy Easter, gentlemen. How are you?
Doing well today.
Matthew, your favorite character in Jaws was the captain?
Yes, it was.
How about the shark?
Yeah, you know, I love anything with sharks. I'll pretty watch any movie, no matter how bad it is, that has a shark in it. But Robert Shaw was just so amazing. Hooper drives the boat, Chief. You know, just he had so many great lines. He was so salty. You know, I don't know. Without a doubt.
Please tell me you're a Jaws fan, Mike.
Well, no, but there was no plot without the shark. You could have did without the captain.
But then if you just had the shark and you didn't have that character, that movie doesn't work. I mean, the backstory on Jaws is quite amazing if you ever watched that on, like, the bio, how they did it and how many times the shark failed.
The shark broke a lot.
Yeah.
So, listen, the reason I called in is because last night, in a drunken stupor, I got into a fierce battle over a movie arguing. So I need you guys to go ahead and pick a winner here of the tie. So we had Hunt for Red October, Spinal Tap, or It's a Mad, 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 Mad World. Which of the three?
It's a Mad, 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 Mad World for me is one of the funniest movies. The first time I saw that, I was pretty much crying throughout.
They're kind of different genres.
They
there.
Are different genres, though. Yeah.
Right? I love Red October is one of my favorite movies. I'm going Red October.
Yeah, they were all good. The age of the people were pretty different, as you can tell by the way the stuff came up. But those are three. I always have to name my three favorite movies. That's what I came up with. And then people started going ballistic.
Well, please tell me it's because you were in a drunken stupor.
Yeah.
You must have better movies than that. I
no,
love
those
them all,
are my favorite movie.
Not like Jaws, Raiders of the Lost Ark, anything, Star Wars. No,
that's pretty much about it.
Well,
I mean, I love all of them. They're all three very, very good, but I don't know if I've ever heard any of them being considered your favorites. I'll watch them all. I think I have two of them. I have Mad Mad and October on DVD. I don't have Spinal Tap, although I like Spinal Tap. I don't know why I don't have it on DVD, actually. But I'm surprised that would be your favorite, Mike. But Red October is a fantastic movie.
Yeah, I don't know. They're something my favorite, so that is what it is. They go along with my draft. By the way, I'm not doing too bad in that Greenwich Street Tavern League, even though you and Mike, who are supposedly supposed to be helping me, have beaten me down. Maybe you lowered my expectations.
What place you in? Do you even watch? I mean, let me ask you a serious question. Do you actually look at your standings? Do you care? I mean, it's 2 weeks in. Are you so? I mean, yep. When I say look at them, I'm not saying, hey, you turn to open up the home page and it happens to be on there so you see it. But do you actually go to look at your standings right now?
Oh, I analyze the heck out of them, but I only look at them with regard to where I am with regard to Engel.
Yes, he's got to beat Scott, and all is good.
So I was actually ahead of him for about 3 hours in live scoring the other night, and I composed a tweet and everything, took a screenshot and everything. So that's my goal. I think I'm fifth, which is not bad.
Nice. That's a nice start.
Yeah.
I remember your team.
It's always better to be on top of the leaderboard. I don't care what people say. Look, it's too early to be really looking at stuff, but it's just such a better feeling than when you open up the page.
What was mind-boggling to me? I picked up Avisail Garcia and Zach Cozart in Fab after the first week, which, you know, the way I went about it, taking a couple of minor leaguers and guys who were hurt, Kipnis and stuff like that, you know, I needed that to kind of help my roster. I was kind of planning on that. But it was mind-boggling to me that in a 15-team mixed league, that those two guys were available. You would have thought that they would have went in some other guys, particularly Cozart. I'm guessing he's going to be important to somebody down the stretch of the season, don't you think? Some team? You're going to get traded?
I agree with both, yeah. I mean, Cozart, if he can stay healthy, keep those knees good, you know, it's possibly his upside is probably 20 home runs in that ballpark. But like you said, he'll probably get traded. And is Avisail Garcia finally going to reach some of that potential that we've all had for him? In the leagues I've done, the 15-teamers with 30 rounds, neither of those guys made it out.
Yeah, I'm surprised either one was available there. They both have value. Cozart, he has to be dealt. I think they're probably waiting for a team to lose a shortstop, you know, that where they have to come crawling to them and crying to them. But fifth place, Mike, good for you. I'm not going to tell you I remember your team. I do remember some of the moves you made that I didn't agree with, which I believe was Greinke in round four and maybe Harvey a little earlier. Although Harvey looks like he might actually work out for you.
Well, you know, I think the person that I took the people killed me the most was Joey Gallo.
Really?
I don't even remember Joey Gallo being on your team. That's going to work out because Adrian Beltre, we don't know when he's coming back. But as much as you like Gallo, man, that batting average still has to come up quite a bit.
Yeah, but he looks like a better player this year.
You know what? First of all, he runs his pitch. The other thing is, it's a little bit of a misnomer. You know, suppose he hits 235, right? The major league batting average is 254.
That's not the fantasy batting average.
Yeah, but still, if you get somebody who can hit 40 home runs, and if they hit 235, it does not kill you. If you don't litter your team with them. And so he can field a little bit. I think, you know, you may find him at some points. They'll find his bat. Once he gets comfortable, they'll find his bat somewhere in that lineup on a semi-regular basis. I think even if Beltre comes back, he's good for at least 450 at-bats this year.
Well, they could put him in left field. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah, that's where their open spot is. The problem is he's going to be a defensive detriment out there. I've said it before, Mike. I think if Gallo were to play, you said 450 at-bats. I think I used 500. I think he did 30-plus home runs. The average, you said 235, which is probably about what I had there. And you're right. Fantasy-wise, we can all survive that. We can all pay for that as long as we get the home runs. You have to offset that somewhere, but that could be done here. What we're afraid of is 30 home runs and a 210 batting average, a 200 batting average. That's what I'm more worried about. But I think the kid is fine as long as they play him. But I'm worried that the Rangers will find a reason not to play him. You know, they'll put Profar out there. They'll put Chu out there. They'll find another reason not to play him.
He's off to a halfway decent start. He's taking competitive at-bats. He's pretty much getting a hit every night, even if the other outs are strikeouts. And, you know, I think one of the things, too, is both him more so, but even with Avisail Garcia, I think people forget how young these guys still are.
They do. You're right. We're in day and age now. I mean, Mike, you're our age. We remember back then where players got time to figure things out. You don't get that time anymore. If you don't come up hitting immediately, you know, the fans immediately want you sent back down to AAA, AA. You're on the bench. It's a complete waste. I mean, you look at what's happening with Conforto, where the Mets don't give him enough playing time because they want to get the veterans in there. There's so much other stuff going around here that young players don't get enough of a chance now.
I mean, as much as people are calling Byron Buxton a bust, he just turned 23 in, like, January. So people need to just give this guy a chance.
Yeah, and listen, before I let you go here, you know, one of the things that I was speaking about last night with my buddies was how old we felt. How many people are you watching now that you saw their parents play, their fathers play, or people that you watched that are retired that you saw your parents play? And George, that'll kind of put things in perspective for you today.
Yeah, that you're right. That does make you feel. You know, can't speak for you, but I don't feel that old. And then you realize, oh my God, I am that old. When you realize some of the stuff you're talking about, when you hear about, oh, this guy's son is now, being called up, like Guerrero's son, we'll see him soon. You know, that, thanks, Mike. Thanks for making me feel old. Mike, before we let you go. What are you doing today, Mike? How are you celebrating your Easter?
Family coming on. I'm staying home, keeping it low. Keeping it low.
No, you're the only person staying home. The rest of us are all traveling.
Yeah,
today.
Getting on the road, unfortunately.
Now, me and travel is like oil and water.
All right. Well, Mike,
happy Easter to both of you.
Yes, happy Easter.
Have a great Easter, Mike. Thanks for calling in.
All right, thanks.
That was Mike Cardano, everybody. The czar, the emperor of the Fantasy Radio Network. Mike, you know, we give Mike a lot of grief, but Mike has a lot of stuff on his plate. Works his ass off to get all this thing going here. So thank you very much, Mr. Cardano.
Yes, thank you,
for calling in
Cardano
on Sunday morning. Mike, it's funny. What Mike and Scott, when they go at each other and how badly Mike wants to beat Scott, the stuff they do on Twitter is hilarious. There's been nights where it's been slow nights, and then all of a sudden they're going at it, and that's my entertainment, just listening to Mike. I shouldn't say listening, reading Mike and Scott go at each other.
Well, I'm hoping Team Cardano defeats Team Engel.
Is there anybody who's not hoping that?
Yeah, I don't know. Life's crazy.
I don't know why.
People are strange. You never know.
I don't know why people are rooting against Scott, but listen, we are halfway through the show. Matt Modica, George Kurtz here on Easter Sunday. Mike Cardano joining us. Once again, you have any fantasy questions, we don't really care about what it's about. We'll answer them. 844-84-FNTSY. Matt Modica, George Kurtz, back after this. I don't even know what genre this is. Welcome back. Another record to the Weekend Morning Show. I mean, Pete Considine, we love Pete.
It's uplifting.
Fan. Maybe he loves a little strong. Listen, would classic rock kill you?
I mean, it really, coming up. Don't
you?
Worry.
Yeah, I have it coming up. Now, listen.
I'm trying to keep you guys on your toes.
Oh, you're doing a good job of that.
That you are.
I worked with Tony Cincotta for years doing the Saturday and Sunday show. And Tony's a big country music guy, and that's all I heard was country music.
I really
wanted to hang myself. Yeah, and you see what's annoying is that Tony likes rock. He does. He goes to a lot of rock concerts. He knows all the bands, but all we played on the intro and the outro was constantly country music. And after a while, you know, it's every country song is the same. Like, my wife left me, the car died, dog ran away, blah 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 blah. And after a while, I want to drive my truck into a brick wall. Listening to this over and over again. So you're not that bad, Pete. All right, things could be worse. I freely admit things could be worse.
I take that as a compliment. Thank you.
I'm kidding, of course, about the. I actually don't mind country. I probably like country western more than anything. As far as the country genre is concerned, I prefer country western. But I'm a classic rock guy. I'm the Who, Genesis, Queen, Floyd, Stone, Zeppelin, all that. That's my genre. That's what I enjoy. I'm also a Weird Al guy. You like Weird Al, Matt?
Nah, not really. I mean, watching some of the videos back in the day, you know, the first couple of times you saw it was kind of funny. But, I mean, the guy...
That's when I was starting to like you.
It's amazing the amount of money that guy made. I give him that. You know, he basically, you know, what he was able to do is... I have to admire him for that. But I'm more of like, I do love the classic rock, like you mentioned, some of the bands, even the Doors I throw in there. I was a big grunge guy. Pearl Jam, Nirvana, Soundgarden, Alice in Chains, loved that music. Really, we was into that.
You know, I'm the guy who has all the Weird Al albums. And I think I have every one. And if I
really?
Don't, I will. He makes me laugh. It's funny. And laughter's a good thing there. So, yes, that's my kind of music. So, listen, we've discussed music. We've discussed movies. I guess we should get back to some baseball.
Sounds like a plan.
All right, that does sound like a plan. Eric Thames.
Eric
Big Thames. Day yesterday.
Man on fire.
What are you doing here? I mean, let's say you own Thames. Are you a believer that he can keep it up the rest of the season, or maybe is it the sell-high time?
If I'm in a trading league, I'd always listen to every offer. If somebody really thinks Eric Thames is, you know, just going to never stop hitting like this, you got to listen. I mean, I'm not actively trying to ship him, trade him, whatever. I think he's good. We always known the power was real with this guy. He left the U.S., became a tremendous player in Korea. The question was, I was kind of suspect. Then you saw what Fangraphs had him as, what Steamer had him as a projection, which kind of blew everybody's mind. So I did get a couple of shares of him. I'm more annoyed that he doesn't have first base eligibility just yet, because this Jesus Aguilar thing versus left-handers was really becoming annoying. So he's a guy, look, if somebody gives me the right offer, I would trade. But I believe in the power. I think he'll give you some speed. It's the average that's not going to stay there. You know, he's going to be more of a lower average guy. I don't think the average is going to kill you, though. I don't think it's going to be Joey Gallo-esque.
No, I have really nothing to add to that. I agree with you completely on everything you said. I think people, when they say something, oh, this guy's untradeable, that's BS. Everybody is tradable if I get the right offer. If I have Mike Trout, he's tradable if you make me the right offer.
Exactly.
Granted, it's going to take a hell of an offer, but he's movable. Everybody is.
No, I agree. I mean, sometimes those are the – I especially find that, like, towards the middle of the season or, like, around the All-Star break or, say, even just before, if you can trade a stud to get multiple guys to help you in multiple categories – I mean, look, you want good players. I mean, maybe you're trading the elite guy and you're getting two very good guys. You know, because once you hit that middle of the season, it's about – winning those categories. I mean, it's always about that, but that's when you got to focus in and see where you can make the biggest gains.
See, sometimes I think you're just reading my mind, Matt, because that's what I was going to bring up here. What's the biggest complaint we hear in fantasy about some of the trades are lopsided and stuff like that? But, you know, once you get to the middle of the season, I mean, this is an extreme example, but a Bryce Harper for Billy Hamilton deal might make sense. Maybe you don't need power. All you need is stolen bases. That's the one category you can gain in. So that trade makes sense in that instance because you're looking for hit categories. You know, we're not trading baseball players here. If you're not in a keeper league or a dynasty league, you're in a redraft league, a league where you draft new every season, then you need to win that year and hit those categories. So that's something we'll see here. So I'm completely on board with you here that, you know, as you trade, you're not really trading for players anymore. You trade for categories. Looking for the categories you can hit. And, you know, sometimes you have to have that come-to-Jesus moment with yourself. You know, what categories can I realistically gain ground in? What categories am I not? I'm too far behind. It can be tough to do that, but that's our job. As a fantasy owner, as an analyst, that's what we do.
Yeah, but, George, to play off your point, I think you hit it there. Because when you said, like, Bryce Harper for Billy Hamilton or something like that, or say you had, like, whatever it may be, whatever the category needs, speed, saves. A lot of people, even the redraft leagues, they don't get it. And then it causes friction, and people are like, oh, this is a joke, you're in cahoots. And honestly, I never thought I would say it, because as somebody who was a sales trader, loved, even when I first started doing it in Yahoo, I mean, I was the guy that was on the leaderboard of transactions, trade offers. This is the first year that I am not in a trade league. And I am absolutely ecstatic about it. I think it makes you make your draft is so much more important. The fab is critical every week. Who you're going to pick up, who you're going to drop. So for me, it's kind of been like an evolution like that, something I never thought I would say.
I'm not positive on this, but I believe every league I play in is a trade league. I didn't read the rules, maybe one's not, but I believe most are. But one thing I've been saying for years now, I don't know about the leagues where you're allowed to trade in, and the point you made is true. People bitch like there's no tomorrow about these trades, and mainly that's because, it's collusion, this guy ripped them off. Well, you know what? You're really mad because you didn't get in on it, because you didn't realize that play was up for sale here, and yes, you think he got a great deal, but how many deals, and this is true even if deals I think are fair, or as far as that, I don't think are collusion-wise. You look back at it, oh, wow, I was wrong. The other guy did win that deal. He was right, you know, for whatever reason. You know, unless a deal is collusion, I don't think a deal should ever, ever be overturned. Other than that, you have to let these owners make their own mistakes. I'm a GM of my team, not your team. Yeah, you do what you want to do. If there's not collusion, I think owners have to be allowed to make their mistakes. But one thing, my original point was this. In most of the leagues I'm in, trading is rare. You just don't see many trades anymore. And I think it's because of people like you, me, you know, Cicada, Scott Engel, because everyone's afraid that we're going to rip it apart. Oh, you're an idiot. How could you do that? How could you not have called us first or emailed us first and all that stuff? You know, they're afraid of being criticized. Or they want to win a deal. They want to, not only do they want to win it, but they want to win it, you know, 28-0. But there's no doubt they want to. They want to, you know, rip somebody off. If they think it's close or fair, forget it. They're not doing it because they're afraid. They're afraid of losing a deal.
You're 100% right on that if it's close or something. What I've found in the last couple of years, if I really want to get a trade done, I have to pay a little extra. That'll get it done because, like you said, everybody wants to win the trade. They're afraid, oh, if I trade this guy, he's going to be great. But if I'm, you know, don't look to hoodwink people. And I hate when people tell you, oh, when they offer you a trade and they tell you what your team needs as if you have no idea what your team needs. Like, you don't know. You don't know areas that you're struggling in.
We are definitely going to discuss this further because I think there is the art of trading and how you should go about it. Pete Considori, my producer, is going to have a heart attack if I don't try and get to break somewhere on time. So I'll do Pete a favor here. We'll go to break now, but when we come back, Matt Modica, George Kretsch, we'll discuss more about how you may want to go about trading on this Easter Sunday. We're back after this. Makes you wonder what he's laughing about now, don't it, folks? George Kurtz, Matt Modica, Roto Experts Weekend Morning Show here. We have another hour left to go. Talk a little baseball here. Not really much going on in the world of football to talk about. We beat that pretty good yesterday. You know, you're listening to the commercials. Matt Modica, how do you feel about Tony Cincotta worried about your sodium intake?
Well, as he was saying that, I'm looking at the buffet here at Rock and Riley's and people grabbing strips of bacon and my mouth watering. So, but it is nice of Tony that he cares.
He does care. That's what, when I think Tony Cincotta, that's what I think, caring. You know, caring. And I, another one of the things on the commercial, I don't understand how Scott Engel trips over the dog. Because he had too much wine.
I think he's known for tripping over the wires in the control room, so I can see him tripping.
I think he's known for not turning his mic on. I can't tell you how many mornings they've got that. Anyway, I see Corey, hey, Mike, Scott, turn your mic on, Scott. You know, so that, I think that's what Scott's known for there in the morning. Anyway, so back to trading. Like I said, now you and I are in agreement that people don't trade a lot now because they're afraid of being criticized. I don't know how you go about trading, but I know if I'm trading with Matt Modica, you know, the first thing I'm going to look at your team. What does Matt need? Because I don't want to waste my time. If Matt has 18 first basemen on his roster, I'm not going to offer him a first baseman. All right, I don't need him to say, listen, no. You know, I want to try to make and I'm going to make Matt a competitive offer. I'm not going to give you my best offer. Our odds are against it, unless my time is really, I don't have time to deal with this. But I'm going to make you a competitive offer, but one where I know some people that I've played with like to feel like they can negotiate and haggle and get more. That's how they feel good about themselves. So I generally make maybe an 80 cents on a dollar offer, but something I'm willing to go up for, and I'm hoping that you'll feel good about yourself if you get that. That's how I generally go about things, Matt. Like I said, I'm not going to insult you. This is not because Matt's an expert or, you know, in the industry. Even in my home leagues, I do the same thing. I don't insult people because I want them to come back to me. I want to open the lines of communication here, even if they don't accept that first offer. That's how I go about trading.
The way I will do it is I will try and, you know, like you said, you'll get a look. If somebody's got three first basemen or two stud first basemen, you're not going to, obviously. But I'm going to pretty much try and give you a really good offer up front. And I'm willing to take a counter. And I just don't want to be, you know, if you come back to me with something that's ridiculous, then that's pretty much going to end the trade discussion there. I'm not going to waste my time going back. But I'm willing, if there's somebody I want, I had reached the point where it's not even, I'm not even going to play around. I'm going to make a fair offer, or what I think is fair. I'm not going to try and give even like 80 cents. I'm going to try and do like a one for one or whatever, if we're packaging, say, two guys each. whatever it may be, I'm going to try and come at that person correct with an offer that I think, in my mind, if it wasn't my team and I was looking at it, I would think it to be fair. And maybe that person still doesn't like it. But my hope is they'll come back to me with something that, in their mind, is fair as well.
Yeah, I think you hit one thing there. If you make me an insulting offer, I'm not even talking to you. I don't have time for this. All right, if you're offering me, hey, you know, I'll give you Brett Gardner for Mike Trout. Really? Go away.
Well, George, we had a great example. Scott actually had a great example of it the other morning when he was talking with Tony about one of the guys, and I believe it was Tout. I may be wrong. It was one of those like expert leagues, man. No, maybe it was an AL only. Somebody offered him Devin Travis, and I'm trying to think of the pitcher, for Chris Sale. And he basically said, you need a second baseman, and I need a little bit of a better starting pitcher. And this really was, I mean, it was really insulting, because I can't believe I can't remember the pitcher's name. But, I mean, Scott had every right to kind of be like, you know, pissed off and insulted about it. And he wrote him back, like, this is one of the worst offers I've ever received.
I won't even write at you back. I mean, if it's that insulting, and this one, I don't know what the other pitcher was, but man, if it's Travis and someone like Brandon Finnegan, really?
Yeah, it was not a pitcher that was anywhere near close to Chris Sale, and he made it sound like it was terrible.
First of all, if you have to talk me into a deal, then something's probably wrong. All right, I don't need your help knowing what my team needs. I probably have a pretty good idea. I certainly know, and that was when he's talking about Scott Engel here. He certainly knows the league. He knows what's going on. He knows what he needs and what he doesn't need. He certainly knows what all the players. It's not like you're gonna offer him a player. Who? What? Oh, this guy's that good? Yes. That's you're an expert league. I think it's just silly to try and play this game. You know, you want to try that in your home league? Maybe you could snow somebody. Hey, go for it. It'll tick me off. Yeah, it just will, because you're somebody I won't want to deal with. I know I played in an industry league where the guy fully admits that he was a badgerer. Yeah, he would come to you and either badger you about a deal or make 18,000 offers. I don't mind the 18,000 offers, but if you're going to badger me, sooner or later, I'm just going to block your email. And
yeah.
It's really that simple. Go away.
But when you're sending that email, I mean, what are you hoping for? Are you really think that these people are going to accept these ridiculous offers? And aren't you pretty much expecting to be, like, rejected and trade talk shut down? I mean, unless you're just that delusional and that clueless, like, oh yeah, I'm really going to pull a fast one over on this guy or something. I mean, every league usually has like a weakest link kind of player, and people will try and, take advantage, which I don't find to be right neither. And, if somebody is taken advantage of, that's when maybe you have to say, look, maybe this wasn't a good idea. Maybe that person shouldn't be invited back the following year. Because if this is one thing I will say, if you are in a league, if it's a public league, you want to do one of ESPN just because you wanted to play and you didn't have enough guys to get together, that's different. But any like home league that you get together with 12 guys or 10 guys or 15 guys, and it's a trading league and you can't trust these guys to make a trade without colluding, then you shouldn't be in the league.
Exactly. Get out. Get out. But the point you made about someone who's badgering you for a deal or makes these kind of offers to everybody, I think it's exactly what they're hoping for, is that someone will say yes. I sort of equate it. I was talking to my niece last night, my 18-year-old niece, about how, I try to tell how guys really are when it comes to the dating game. And that I had some friends that didn't care really about the girl at all. They would ask out 100 girls. Why? Because they were playing a numbers game. They assumed that one would say yes. And that's what I equate these trades. This guy that keeps badgering, that he's going to send out all these trade offers. They're all slanted in his favor. Maybe not overly slanted, but they're all slanted in his favor. And what he's hoping for, he knows 99% are going to be no's. But maybe somebody will hit yes by mistake. Somebody will be drunk. Maybe somebody will be in love with that play for some reason. That somebody will say yes. Eventually one of these trades will be made. I think it's the same exact game they're playing here. They're hoping, once again, for some reason, whatever it might be, that somebody will hit accept twice, right? And make that deal. That's the way what I equate it to.
I'll say this when it goes to trades. My last thing I'll say on it is, if you send a trade and in your mind you wouldn't be willing to accept it if you were that guy, you shouldn't send the trade.
Probably not. You know, and I also have, I know I don't like trading with players who I consider very good. In my home league, I won't trade with the players who I think could threaten me. I'd rather trade with somebody who I think, because a lot of times you mentioned it, you might have to make an offer better than what you want to. I do the same thing. So that's to get a trade done, I got to offer more than I want to. So I don't want to trade it to a good player, you know, and help them out too much there. I'd rather do it to what I could consider a lesser player or somebody who I think my team's better than anyway. Yeah, I'm very careful with that, too. I don't want to make a good team really, really too good is really what I'm going down with here. So I said, trading's fun. I do enjoy trading, but it's nothing like it used to be. I've been playing fantasy for 30 years, and we don't trade anywhere near what we used to be. But that's all right. The game is still fun. Just a different way of playing here now. We have an hour left. Roto Experts Weekend Morning Show. When we get back, 9 a.m., we're talking some hockey playoffs for the next segment.
Woo-hoo!
Yeah, boo.
I'm happy.
No Canadians.
Let's get this done.